And welcome to another exciting show here with me, Carmel Fisher. We're bringing you some insights today from Trilogy Metals Inc. With me, I've got CEO Tony Giardini. Again, Trilogy Metals Inc. is listed on the NYSE as TMQ. Tony, welcome.
Well, that's great to be here, Carmel, and thanks for the warm introduction and indicating that TMQ is listed. We're listed on the TSX as well as on the New York Stock Exchange, so covering both and looking forward to our discussion.
Wonderful. Yes, thanks for clarifying that. So as I've researched, Trilogy Metals does engage in the exploration and development of mineral properties here in the United States. Won't you please tell us a little bit more about the most recent news related to the admin changes, but also more about the company, primary metal explorations that you're focusing on, and the company's principal interests or projects?
Sure. So Trilogy Metals is focused on a number of critical metals. We have two large exploration deposits in the great state of Alaska. One is a polymetallic deposit called Arctic. It's a VMS deposit, which is about 46 million tons. We have a feasibility study on that. We'll talk a little bit more about where that's at. And then we have an advanced stage exploration project called Bornite, which is a copper cobalt deposit, quite large. And more work to do on in terms of moving that forward. The company has been around since 2012, and I think it's been a bit of a challenge process over the last few years. We were ready to really advance our development in the district in 2020 when the election happened in November, and I think the tone in Washington changed a little bit towards resource development, and we were in a bit of a period of uncertainty with respect to where things were going. One of the keys to moving our projects forward in the district is really infrastructure development, which is going to be moved forward by the state of Alaska. And so the principal issue that impacted us was a road that had been permitted under the Trump administration, which was then almost effectively reversed under the Biden administration. So things are looking much more positively for us now with the change of government in November of last year. And the tone coming out of Washington is that the record of decision from 2020 is likely to be reinstated at some point, and we're just waiting to see the way that ends up happening. So we're positive in terms of looking forward on getting that behind us. But the real story for us is about the exploration potential in the district and the opportunities that we have there. And that's what I'm really interested in giving the audience some information on.
Excited to definitely dive into that. And let's look now at a bit of more strategic partnerships, capital allocation. The South32 joint venture brought $145 million to the table, but you are developing, as you mentioned, two major projects, Arctic and Bornite, vastly different NPVs and timelines there. How are you and South32 prioritizing the capital allocation between these assets?
Yeah, South32 for your listeners is an Australian-based company out of Perth. They're a large multinational. They were demerged BHP a number of years ago, and we represent a very sizable investment for them. As you pointed out, they contributed $145 million into a JV to create a 50-50 JV on the district. But in addition to that, they invested $30 million in exploration spending plus. They own 11% of Trilogy outright. So in total, they've invested close to $200 million in terms of Trilogy. So the way we look at South32 is effectively a validation of what we have up in the Ambler Mining District, because they've done their due diligence on the geology, they've done their due diligence on the opportunities and the upside. And it's really about how we move things forward. So as you point out, the $145 million was really there to advance and move the projects forward and get us to an investment decision. We have a pre-feasibility study done at the JV level on the Arctic project, and we're hoping to take that to further study work shortly. And we're at the cusp of starting the actual mine permitting process, subject to getting resolution of the road, which we hope will happen in the near term. So at that point, we would start mine permitting, and we would continue with advancing study work, primarily focused at Arctic. From a Bornite perspective, we haven't spent a lot of money at Bornite. Interestingly enough, when South32 made their initial investment in the district and in Trilogy, they were very much focused on the Bornite deposit. It's roughly 200 million tons at 1.46% copper. And what we've done is we recently did a preliminary economic assessment looking at how Bornite could be incorporated, a portion of Bornite could be incorporated with the Arctic deposit and take Arctic from 13, 14-year mine life to a 30-year mine life. So I think the next focus for us on Arctic will really, or on Bornite, excuse me, will really be about how do we get a better understanding of how Bornite could either fit into a sequence with the development of Arctic or be its own standalone project. And what we're looking for there is we've made an application for funding for there. That application was accepted a couple of years ago. At the time, there weren't additional funds available. That's changed. So we're refreshing that application and really looking to see if there's the ability to access funds that would allow us to advance Bornite at the same time that we're looking to move forward with respect to Arctic. So that's how we're thinking about things in the future at this point.
Wonderful. So that has touched on certain specific milestones or market conditions that would trigger that decision to accelerate the Bornite development, obviously to achieve, as you mentioned, the 30-year mine life potential. Was there anything that you may have not added in those specific milestones or market conditions that would help us understand the triggering process to get that going?
Hey guys, just a quick interruption to your regularly scheduled podcast. I hope you're enjoying the show. If you have not yet, please go ahead and subscribe so we know who's watching and we can bring you more of what you want to see. We hope you're enjoying the show. Again, thank you for subscribing.
Yeah, so I think when I look at opportunities, I look at this road resolution occurring hopefully in the near term within the next 2 to 3 months, hopefully. Secondly, I looked at we at the JV level would start the mine permitting process. How quickly that advances will really depend on some of the legislative changes that have happened in the US. Our partner, South32, has used an accelerated permitting process for its project in Arizona for Hermosa. And we would want to consider looking at that same accelerated permitting process. So that will be key for us. And then the next thing for us to focus on is getting back out into the field and conducting additional exploration in the district. We haven't done exploration for the last couple of years, largely due to the conditions that I mentioned earlier, which were limited ability to understand where the road was going. But once we have clarity on that, we expect to be back out in the field and we'll want to do additional exploration. Primarily, I would say focused on Arctic, subject to what ends up happening in terms of securing additional funding for Bornite.
Great. So you're positioned across multiple critical minerals. We're looking at copper, zinc, cobalt. These are all pretty essential for the energy transition, but these markets are experiencing different supply-demand dynamics, right? Given your 40 years of industry experience, including your time at Ivanhoe and Kinross, how do you see the timing playing out for peak demand across your commodity suite?
Yeah, it's we're very fortunate because Arctic is a polymetallic deposit, so it's a copper, zinc, lead, gold, silver deposit, and Bornite is a copper, a cobalt deposit. We also think there are other rare earth minerals in the district, and that's something that we're obviously looking at from an exploration perspective as we go down the road. When we look at Bornite as a or Arctic as a deposit, you sort of get all of the minerals at once. So what you would end up producing is very different concentrates, where you would have a copper con, a zinc con, and a lead con that would contain both the silver and gold in that lead con. So you won't necessarily be separating any of those metals in terms of how you look at it. When we stand back and look at the supply-demand fundamentals, I think we feel like we're in a pretty good position. The U.S. has really designated, they've already designated copper, zinc, and recently lead and silver as critical metals. So we see those as being very important to U.S. domestic supply considerations. And we think there's an opportunity to bring this project forward at a critical time in terms of that domestic supply. Clearly, there's some challenges in the copper market. There was a story earlier today where Chile is talking about, what is going to happen in that great mining country. And they're talking about the deposits going deeper, the lower grades, water issues in terms of being able to access water. So when we look at a deposit like ours, whether it's Arctic or Bornite, we see that it has a potential to provide domestic sources of these critical metals to the U.S. Economy. Gold's an interesting metal. We're not really a gold deposit, but there is gold and silver in the deposit. And I think what that does is it gives us lots of flexibility as we look at potential financing sources for developing the projects down the road, whether we do that through the JV structure or whether Trilogy does that on its own, looking at its own needs to finance its share of capital. So we think there's lots of flexibility that comes out of those metals. And I saw today that gold is getting close to $3,600 an ounce. So it's a far cry from the $1,600 approximately that we're using in our feasibility study at the Trilogy level.
Yes, indeed. So given all of that, which metals do you believe will drive the strongest returns for investors over the next, say, 5 to 10 years?
Tough question. I wish I had that crystal ball and I could answer that question. And I've been in the space for a long time. I'm partial to looking at the base metals, the copper and zinc side, because I think that there's a lot of capacity needs. And I think when you talk about copper right now, I think in a couple of years ago, the thought process was really looking at transition to electric vehicles, which is still happening, maybe not at the same pace that we thought it was going to happen in North America, but worldwide it's happening on an accelerated basis. And so there's going to be a significant increase in copper demand to fulfill that. But I think what we're also seeing is the AI revolution coming in a big way, and the data centers that are going to be needed to power the AI revolution, whether it's in North America or elsewhere. And once again, copper is going to be a critical component that will be required in those AI centers. And then we just look at transmission of electricity and how that's going to move forward. Now, there's some substitution happening of aluminum coming in and substituting for copper, but I think when I look at the metals that we have in our portfolio, we certainly see copper as one that is probably the brightest light. Cobalt's interesting. Our Bornite deposit has about 88 million pounds of cobalt in an inferred resource. That's probably one of the largest concentrations of cobalt in the US. The focus there is how do we recover that and how do we recover it economically? And I think that's some of the work that we would like to engage with if we are able to secure additional funding with the help of the US government.
Now, your partnership with NANA Regional Corporation, I believe I'm saying that correctly, NANA Regional Corporation, NANA Corporation, and your commitment to respecting Indigenous culture is clearly central to the business model, especially given Alaska's complex regulatory and social landscape. So, from an investor perspective, how do you quantify the competitive advantage that this relationship provides versus other mining companies?
Well, what's interesting about our relationship with NANA, it goes back a while. And what we did in 2011 was we negotiated an agreement where we basically put the Arctic deposit together with the Bornite deposit. So we created a much larger area of interest that covers both. And NANA, as a partner, has the ability to financially participate either the individual asset level or getting a net profit interest. So there's real financial incentives for NANA with respect to our project. And I think that's key in terms of having a win-win. But as we look forward, I think the keys for NANA really center on the nature of a road and the fact that it would be a private industrial use road only. We have to look at the subsistence lifestyle that exists in the region and ensure that there's a real focus on respecting that subsistence lifestyle when it comes to the caribou herds, when it comes to fishing, when it comes to stewardship of a land. Those will be key considerations. And we have processes in place to directly dialogue with the NANA leadership through the joint venture. We have an oversight committee. We have regular discussions and focus. But at the end of the day, to have a social license to operate in the district that we're in, we need to maintain a strong relationship and support from NANA and from the shareholders that are in the Northwest Arctic Borough that NANA represents. And then there's also a second ANC, Alaska Native Corporation, Doyon, which, although we're not on Doyon land, we'll be passing through Doyon land in terms of a road construction that would be allowing us access into the district. So both ANCs are focused on the subsistence issues that I highlighted. They're also focused on economic development, jobs, and they're focused on procurement opportunities that could come in lasting benefits to the communities. The good thing of working with NANA is that they're no stranger to mining.
Excellent. Looking a bit at the capital structure, financial runway with $24.6 million in cash and the new $50 million shelf prospectus, plus the $25 million ATM program now in place, is clearly a very structured financial flexibility that you put in place. Given the capital intensive nature of advancing both Arctic and bornite toward production decisions, how do you see this funding structure supporting the development?
Well, I think it's part of a longer term strategy in terms of looking at how we can fund our share of the development costs as things move forward. The cash that we have on hand is certainly enough to fund our obligations for the next couple of years within the Ambler Mining District as far as advancing exploration and moving forward on some of the items that I mentioned earlier in terms of permitting and study work that we want to do, and also fund our G&A, which we try to keep at a very low level at the corporate entity. What we want to do in terms of having the shelf in place is really give us financial flexibility to be able to raise some money, not a lot of money, but some money as we move forward. And that money is really to replenish the coffers at the Ambler JV and allow the project to continue to advance. So when we're looking at the next couple of years, we want to be in a strong financial position to be able to ensure that we can fund the exploration and get ourselves to an investment decision as quickly as possible. The longer term future, in terms of how the structure looks from a financing perspective, is something that we'll be looking at. And we'll be looking at, some of the sources of funding that's out there. There's lots of cases now of US Exim looking at providing funding for development of projects in the US and particularly focused on critical metals. So we think that that's something that is definitely right up our alley we can look at. We'll also look at, as I said earlier, the fact that we're blessed of having gold and silver within the deposits, which I think give us some opportunity to look at funding options utilizing that gold and silver could possibly be monetized to help accelerate the development of the copper, zinc, and lead components of the deposit. So we think we've got lots of flexibility right now. We're in a strong position, but we recognize that we don't have a crystal ball on where the markets are going from a metal perspective. So we want to make sure that we continue to be diligent in terms of how we manage shareholders' money in terms of advancing the project and spending money on our G&A at corporate level.
For sure, and mitigating that potential for excessive dilution to shareholders, as you mentioned. And what key development milestones would you anticipate tapping into these facilities versus relying on your South32 partnership for additional capital?
Well, I think for us, the key is really, as I said earlier, the specific getting the road back on track, which we would hope would be fairly soon, and then starting the permitting process and really looking at a field season for next year. Those are the milestones that we see from the development perspective, and hopefully accelerating some of the technical study work so that we're in a position to get to an investment decision as quickly as possible. I think ourselves, well, I know that ourselves and South32 are very aligned in terms of advancing the project on a reasonable timeline. And what we want to make sure is that as we work with our partners, NANA and ADA, that they're also comfortable in terms of what we're looking at from a timeline perspective. We also recognize that the current administration is very focused on ensuring a domestic supply of critical metals. And some of the decisions that have been made, or the focus that has been brought to the critical metal shortfalls and needs in the US, are very critical to us as we advance our projects. And what we want to obviously try to do is engage with this administration in terms of moving the project forward as quickly as possible, recognizing that, whether you're permitting an asset in the US or Canada or Australia or anywhere for that matter, you're always going to have some opposition to moving projects forward. And we want to make sure that everything that we do from a permitting perspective is at the highest standard possible to ensure that we're able to move these projects forward as quickly as we can.
For sure. And obviously we've discussed earlier how the market has seen, significant volatility in mining equities, despite, the strong underlying fundamentals for your commodity suite. With your stock trading on both TSX and NYSE, as we've mentioned, given your expertise in capital markets, how do you view Trilogy's current valuation relative to peers with similar grade copper assets?
Well, I think there's a lot of room for upside in our story right now. And just to, just to give you a couple of senses of why I believe that. I think in November of last year, when the election came about, share price had a very significant move. And that was on the basis that hopefully the issues that we were challenged with were going to be unlocked. And on the day of the election, we saw our shares trade 80 million shares, 80 million on one day, which, if you take out the major shareholders and shareholders that can't trade the stock, it was actually more than the float that was available to trade. So we traded more than one times our actual available float at that point. And I think that was really in recognition of where things were going and that there were going to be some future catalysts. I think those catalysts are on the cusp of happening, and I expect that we'll see some additional positive price appreciation as a result. And just to give you a bit of a sense of the valuation scenario, when we were granted the Record of Decision in 2020, the stock was trading $3 US at that point in time. I think copper was probably around $3.50, gold was probably 1300, silver was in the 20s, et cetera. Today, on a US basis, we're trading $1.70. So just using that as a parallel, if we're able to get back and look at getting the road back on track, I see no reason why we wouldn't be close to or above where we were in 2020 when the Record of Decision initially came out. But we're in a much higher gold price environment. So when we look at our P to NAV, it's very low. I see lots of upside in terms of the ability to move things forward. And there's a huge scarcity fa factor with respect to these kinds of deposits that are out there. So when we look at, the potential upside in share price, I think we see a very bullish story. I personally own about 4.4% of the underlying shares right now. On a fully diluted basis, it's probably closer to 9%. For 3 years, I took all of my compensation in equity. So I'm aligned 100% with shareholders. And I'd like to say during that 3 year time period, I was buying the stock every day, and I will continue to increase my equity position going forward. So I'm very positive on the quality of a deposit that we have. Our partnerships, whether it's South32, ADA, or NANA, and our ability to advance this project now with the support that we have in both Washington and the great state of Alaska, where Governor Dunleavy has been a big supporter of our project.
Excellent. And I think that covers most of what we wanted to get more information on today with this podcast interview. Tony, thank you so much. Appreciate it. I've been talking with Tony Giardini from Trilogy Metals Inc. He is the Chief Executive Officer. They are listed on the NYSE as well as TSX. You guys stay tuned for more. Thank you, Tony.
Brought to you, as always, by The Harvest Podcast, available anywhere you listen to podcasts.